Hello everyone, it's Laura Wicks here. In this podcast, I'm going to share with you a conversation I had recently with composer Graham Fitkin. But as an introduction, we're going to play you a bit of one of his pieces called Hook, which is a really energetic percussion piece, which I hope you'll enjoy. That was the opening of Graham Fitkin's Hook, recorded in Japan by Tambuka last year. Graham is with me now to record our second podcast. Hello, Graham.
Hello, it's very lovely to be with you again.
Almost everybody listening will already know that we've commissioned a new work from Graham to mark our 40th anniversary, which is actually this year. And I just had a look back through my emails earlier this afternoon, and I find that it was actually back in 2015 that the committee first started wondering whether perhaps we should commission something for the 40th anniversary. And we were in touch with your agent, Graham, in June of that year. Oh, no, June of 2016. Right. And then you and I met for the first time in October 2016. So the gestation period of this entire thing has been going on, you know, 5 years or more. Which
yeah, I know, isn't
it? Interesting to reflect on, just how long it takes to make things happen.
Well, it is. I mean, of course, we're in a special situation as well because of COVID. But, you know, it's been from my point of view, it's been very lovely to have that sort of length of gestation period because I've not felt any pressure. It's the sort of thing which means that we can generate stuff as we go along very nicely. And also that, you know, I'm developing a relationship with you and with other people, maybe through doing these sorts of things as well. Whereas sometimes I'm commissioned to write a piece and it's all sorted out on one or two emails. Sometimes I don't even see the performers until right at the end. Yeah. There's even been the odd time when I've not even been at the performance, which is, there might be a practical reason for that, but it might be in another country and I might be doing something else. That always feels as if I feel a bit dislocated. Yeah. So it's, for me, it's much nicer to be involved in this sort of thing. I actually said to my partner Ruth earlier. I said I've got this podcast with Laura later today, and we talked a little bit about it and about the project because she's been part of this whole gestation period of me working on this thing for the last I don't know how long now, and we both agreed that a lot of my professional commissioners could learn a lot from your society. So
yeah,
so
yeah.
Thank you.
And I think it's also lovely, now we're on our second podcast, that we've been talking about it with choir members for such a long time that, you know, we're thinking of commissioning, we're doing funding applications. Yes, we've confirmed it. And now we're actually talking to you about production of the writing process, I hope that it gives everybody a real sense of ownership that this is our piece, and that everybody therefore is going to get increasingly enthusiastic as we build up to rehearsing and then to performing.
Really. Yeah, I hope so, because I'm very much thinking in terms of the choir, who I've been listening to, and in terms of the cathedral, which I even went to a few weeks ago, and I spent a little bit of time with Chris Gray in the cathedral, and then I just spent time in the cathedral envisaging what was going to happen, because I'd got quite a lot of the piece in my head, and so I just wanted to be it might sound crazy to people, but for me it's quite useful for me to put myself in the venue and just imagine you. I mean, I had to ask Chris about the raking, which you're all on the rakes, and where you are in the hall, because you take up a lot of room, don't you?
Huge amounts, and with a big orchestra as well.
Yes, I know. I
mean, the audience way back.
Exactly. So, and I was sort of interested in minutiae of, you know, how many of the bays between columns the choir take up, how many the orchestra take up, how many Chris himself and maybe the soloists take up, and also what's the distance between the back of Chris and the front row. I sort of find all of these things quite potentially helpful in me working out how to think about things. There were certain things which, after I'd been to a cathedral, I thought, oh, well, I'm going to have to rethink this and work out a different way of doing things. So it is really lovely for me to have the chance to do something sort of local where I can go to the venue.
So how's it going? What, you know, how much time are you spending on it, and, you know, how's the piece developing?
Okay, so since before Christmas, actually, it's halfway through December, but increasingly through the Christmas period, and certainly straight after Christmas, I've been spending about 8 hours a day on it, I reckon. I start first thing in the morning, so I prefer to work, I do my best work, I think, first thing in the morning. So that might, depending on how I've slept, it might be 7 o'clock in the morning, or it might be earlier. Ruth is doing some work on a Sunday, which requires her to get up at 5:30. So that means that I have a very early Sunday start. And it's every day. It's not, I don't sort of have a day off. So it's 7 days a week. And it's occupying my every waking moment, really. And I'm pleased about that, because that's great. It's good. I'm excited about it. I've done loads of research on it. I've got, in fact, you can't see my desk here, but I've got books, all these books are about various different books, articles, all to do with researching Humphrey Davy, and not just Humphrey Davy, what was going on in the period around that time, because that's also equally fascinating to me. So the thing is, you do all this research. I now know a lot more about the late 1700s than I ever knew when I was at schools, probably studying the period, and I'm far more interested in it now than I was then as well. Probably 90% of what I've learned and what I've thought might be useful, I'm having to throw away as well. Mm. So there's a big process of trying to work out how to filter all this material which I've been gathering, which I'm pleased I've gathered and I think is important to have gathered, but then find that actually there's not a place for it in the piece, and I have to be strict about that. Really. Mm. So that's the sort of process at the moment. It's difficult to say in terms of how many minutes through I am, because I could say that I'm over halfway through. It could be more than that. It's difficult for me to know, but I'm in the sort of peak time. I reckon in another 3 or 4 weeks, I think I should have the sorts of nuts and bolts of the whole thing, which doesn't mean that it won't change, but I'll have a structure. I mean, I've already got various structures, but most of them have gone out the window until you find what works. And there's a sort of balance between me thinking this is the ideal structure to involve the choir, to involve the soloists, to involve the orchestra. So the orchestra is a character in a sense. And then it changes, and I just have to make sure that I'm holding on to the nub of the matter and not getting distracted by things off one side or another, no matter how alluring they may be. I mean that in the sense of the history and everything about Humphrey Davy, or it might be musically, that I've written some music which I think is excellent in my arrogance. But then but that's not really the point, because it's excellent, but I'm not sure that it's right for this. It might be superfluous in the end.
Yeah. Now, how about another bit of music? There's the Circuit, your two piano concerto that was performed in what you sent me by Catherine Stott and Noriko Ogawa with Tokyo Symphony Orchestra.
Correct, yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Yes, so this was a commission by the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra at first, with Noriko and Kathy Stott. And the reason this one is called Circuit is much easier to describe. It is very much to do with the music. The music is about, well, it's not about electronic circuits, but if you can imagine electronic circuits and switches, I feel the music is a bit like that. You get sense of communication very quickly between this point and that point, and the switches turn, and so we go off in a completely different tangent, and then we come back. And so these switches, I sort of imagine switches being turned on and off through the piece. So that's why it's called that. Strangely enough, the two soloists are actually start off in rhythmic unison against the orchestra. But it's a piece which I wrote when I was in Scotland for some of the time, and I'd broken my leg. And so I remember that I was not able to move around very much, and yet the piece is very physical, and I wanted to be able to play it and sort of envisage it. And one of the things I do when I'm composing is I do tend to try and play the parts through myself in this room. I will sort of, I don't play the violin, but I will imagine that I'm playing the violin. If I don't play the marimba, but I will play the whole piece through and mime it. And I was trying to do this with the piano concerto and the conducting when I was writing it. So I've got these, in fact, my mum came in on me one day when I was writing, and she was just completely flummoxed by what I was doing, why I was capering around the room with a crutch on, one crutch on and one crutch off, and trying to play something, and then, I don't know, just being bombastic in another moment. So the piece is again, actually, it's quite a large and rhythmic piece, but it does have moments of reflection in the middle, three different sections. Thank you.
Circuits by Graham Fitkin, played here in Cardiff by Catherine Stott and Noriko Agawa. Grant Llewellyn conducting the BBC National Orchestra of Wales. And Graham Fitkin sprinting down the steps onto the stage here in Hobnot Hall. I remember introducing this actually when it was premiered at the Bridgewater Hall, and he'd just broken his leg playing football, so he was on crutches, no sprinting back then.
The stirring and haunting final section of Graham's Circuit. You'll no doubt have recognised the dulcet tones of Petrarch Trelawney there. If you'd like to hear the whole 20-minute piece, it's available on YouTube, and links to the music can be found alongside the podcast button in the bulletin. Coming back to the Humphrey Davy Commission, would you like to tell us a bit about the soloists, what other participants you're envisaging?
So the two soloists that we're envisaging at the moment are the countertenor Rory McCleary and the actor narrator Sam West. So Rory is somebody I've worked with on a few occasions. I first actually went to a concert which he did with his group. He's a director of the Marianne Consort, which is an unaccompanied choir, largely doing Renaissance and medieval works. And of all things, they came to this sort of tiny little church in Penzance, St Mary's Church in Penzance. And my brother told me about it, and I think he told me about it, and we went along. I knew of them already, but I'd never met Rory. It was stunning. It was a really fantastic concert. And after that, I was in touch with Rory, and he knew my work, and I got to know much more of what the Marianne Consort did. And then I invited him to a festival which Ruth and I run in Scotland, the Braemar Festival, and got him to play out there with his group. And they gave the most wonderful concert. And he's just got a sublime voice, and I've always wanted to work with him more. And I think the fact that he's a countertenor, he can also use a tenor voice, but the countertenor gives me that sort of, some of the slightly soaring nature that I want to imbue this piece with. A significant part of the piece is about Humphrey Davy's inhalation of gases, because he used to experiment on himself. And so he would inhale these things. First of all, oxygen is fine. He went on to hydrogen. Then he went on to carbon monoxide and nearly died from that. And then he went on to various other things and came to nitrous oxide, which we now know as laughing gas from him. And so I don't know. I just thought that Rory would be right. And that slightly soaring countertenor timbre would be right for what I was trying to do. So that's Rory. Sam is somebody I've known for a while, and he and I worked together on a piece I did with the London Chamber Orchestra many years back, where he narrated a piece which I wrote called The Athlon. It was for the 2012 Olympics, and he narrated while the music was going on. So he was talking over the music, and I got him to, he's very, very musical indeed. And so I got him to be quite rhythmically precise over the music. And that's something which a lot of actors or narrators probably can't do as well as Sam. And he's a joy to work with. So because of the way the piece is going, I thought at that point, I think I need somebody to put the historic context that Davy's in. And I think that it should be separated between the soloist, the countertenor, who is fundamentally Humphrey Davy, and the narrator, who is a person who is able to say, OK, well, this is all happening at this particular point in time, and this is happening, and this is happening, and so on and so forth. So that's why Sam's involved, and that's why I thought I'd involve him, because I know that I can say to him, OK, we're going to have this particular syllable on the downbeat, and I want this to be much more free, or I want this to be much more like rapping or whatever. You know, I can sort of, he's so musical and able to do that, that's I'm really pleased that he can do it.
It's really exciting for us as well. We all love the idea of a narrator, and when you suggested Sam West, you know, that was even better.
Yes, well, some of your choir members might know him from All Creatures Great and Small, where he was Siegfried Fun. And he's been in various other things. His mum was Prunella Scales for Mrs. Fawlty. Fawlty Towers.
Yes, and everybody knows his father, Timothy West, as well.
Yes, exactly.
Saw him do King Lear at Hall for Cornwall quite a few years ago.
Ah, that's right. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, well, we're in an acting royalty there. Anna, Desert Island Discs, can we pause for a bit of music? There's the wonderful percussion piece called Partially Screaming. What made
Well, Partially Screaming was commissioned by this fabulous French percussion group. There are five of them, and they're called Les Percussions Clavier de Lyon. So they come from Lyon, and they mainly play keyboard percussion, so vibraphones, marimbas, xylophones, glockenspiel, that sort of thing. So that, but they obviously play all sorts of other pieces. I've written a little piece for them before this, but this is the first big piece that I've written for them, and they asked me to write a sort of substantial 15-minute piece for them, which had a certain sense of drama about it. And so that was about it. I wasn't given any more of a brief than that. But I thought about it. I looked at them. I watched their performances. I listened to them, talked to them quite a lot. And in the end, I decided that there's something about the look of five people doing exactly the same thing, ba-ba, or whatever it is. It's just everybody in unison doing the same thing can be very, very powerful. If you think of those... Yes, it is very physical. And so the piece opens up. It's a very hard-hitting, sort of loud, rhythmic piece with lots of excitement going through. It starts loud, and it sort of seems to get louder and bigger and bolder and more things happening constantly as you go through. And from their point of view, it's a bit of a sort of tour de force in the sense that it's difficult individually, but it's very difficult as an ensemble coming together. They have to work together really, really closely to get it all to fit. So the piece is, yes, as I say, it's largely a lot of unison starting, and then things break off into one section, and then they come back into unison, and then another section splits off doing something else, and then you've got three or four things, and then they scuttle back together, and so you've got one whole unison-y type thing, and then it all sort of goes off again. So why is it called Partially Screaming? Well, I think from their point of view, they will be internally partially screaming about the ferocity of what they have to do constantly. But also, we spend a bit of time in Italy, where and that's where I was writing the piece, actually, when I was in Italy. And I was having a lot of... After we do the weekly shopping, and you put the milk in the fridge, I noticed that the milk is actually called partialmente scremato. And I thought, what's that? Oh, it means it's semi-skimmed. But I thought partialmente scremato was a brilliant term, and I thought it needed to be used in a piece of music. So so that became Partially Screaming.
Wonderful. That conveys that sort of franticness that the players must have felt when they were trying to fit all those notes in.
Well, I hope so, yes.
Lovely. Okay, well, I'm sure people will enjoy listening to a bit of that.
Thank you.
a stunning extract from Graham's Partially Screaming, performed by Percussion Clavier de Lyon. Coming back to our commission, we're definitely hoping that November is going to be feasible for a performance. It's, you know, it's impossible for us to be sure. One of the things that the committee is looking at, which a lot of the choir won't be aware of, is that we were wondering just possibly whether we might be able to arrange to do two consecutive performances on Saturday the 27th as planned, and also Sunday the 28th. Now, that depends on a number of things, not least the cathedral's permission to organise things in that way. We have a committee meeting coming up this Tuesday when we'll discuss the sort of financial aspects of the doing a second performance.
Yeah.
When we did it with War Requiem, it was just an absolute joy to be able to come back on the Sunday and do another performance.
Yes.
You put in all this work and all this expense.
I know.
You only get to perform it once. So if we are able to select two performances, we'll certainly want to do that, because I think everybody would be thrilled.
Well, I mean, I think it's an important thing, if possible, because it's not just... Yeah, I mean, you will have all put in all this effort to learning this music. I'll have put in months, if not years, of work just writing it. And there's a lot of money involved in this. And then just for one performance, you know, if we can get two, I think that would be super, really super.
Particularly after such a sort of dearth of performances that we've had over this year.
Yeah,
I think having two performances, it would make up for some of the disappointments that we've had.
Yes, yeah. But I mean, it's often one of the tragedies, if you like, of what I do, is that I do write up the piece and it does take me 6 months' time, and it is often for one performance, and you know, which might be great, but then you're thinking, oh, well, and you're lucky these days sometimes to get repeat performances. Mm-hmm. I had one very good commission which involved something called the Northern Orchestral Consortium, where the Halle came together with the BBC Phil, with the Train, together with English Northern Philharmonia, which came together with the Liverpool Phil. There were five or six performances, and they all came together, and so they paid a lot less because it was split between six of them. I got six performances of the piece, very different performances, which was also fascinating. Yeah. From my point of view, I think, oh, well, I really like the wind section from there, and the brass section from here is superb. And my ideal orchestra would have this section from this orchestra, and, you know, all this sort of thing. Yeah, but it was, and they were doing it with the different conductors as well. So, but nonetheless, it was a really lovely thing to actually have a decent run from the same piece. Yeah.
And so you're anticipating that it'll be finished in time for the printing of scores and things to be done by September, which is when we envisage rehearsal. So there's still an awful lot of the whole process to go through. And I hope there'll be a chance for us to do another podcast, maybe in another 3 months' time.
Sure, yes. I mean, I think that... I'm hopeful that I will have, as I say, finished the nuts and bolts of it in the next month or so, which doesn't mean that it's at all finished, but I will have got to a place where at least I'm comfortable with the fact that I can do it. And then the next 2 months, April, May, I think will be bit by bit, just changing things, making sure things are right, and then possibly leaving it actually for a number of weeks. It's a useful thing, so that then I can come back to it fresh. And then if there's a glaring error, maybe there's one of those sections which I really liked and I couldn't get rid of, maybe at that point I can get rid of it because it should go at that, or vice versa. Maybe it's thinking about the whole thing. And of course, working with text as well as working with the abstract music sounds, plus the fact that I've got a slight chronology going on through Davy's life, sort of from his early-ish years to his death, plus the fact I'm putting historic context, there's quite a few things to consider. And whilst at the moment I might think, oh yes, that follows on really nicely from that, which follows on nicely from that, it might be that, you know, if I give it 3 weeks or 4 weeks when I'm not touching it at all and don't think about it, that when I come back to it, I will think, oh, actually, could have done that a bit more elegantly.
We'll look forward to hearing more about it. I've got another question about a name of one of your pieces, which Simon sent round in the in a podcast last week, which was the thing that you sent me of your work, Vassal.
Ah, right, yes.
So how did you come up with that name?
Well, that's a very strange one, because I was sort of forced into coming up with that. The original piece is a string quartet, not a string orchestral piece. And the piece is called Servant, and it's called Servant because there is a very strict form for the whole thing, and everything is sort of subservient to that. And so there was a certain sense of servitude of the music and the players to so that, to an overall structure, if you like. Hence why it's called Servant. But I thought it would work really nicely as a string orchestra piece. The London Chamber Orchestra, who I mentioned earlier, also thought it would. And so I rearranged it for orchestra. And I think it works just as well, if not better, for orchestra, actually. But the Performing Rights Society could not accept the same title for the two pieces, which is strange. But so I had to come up with a new title. And Vassal was just happened to be the one which I could come up with about one day's notice. So unfortunately, there's nothing particularly to do with it. I mean, it's not a long way from Servant in some ways, but that's why it's called Vassal.
And do you have an inkling of a name in mind for this piece, for our piece?
Well, that is a very good question, and it's one which is sort of, it started to be on my mind, and occasionally I've come up with titles and got rid of them. So in answer to your question, no, I don't have one. And it's going to take me some time before I do. I want to be absolutely sure it doesn't say too much. I don't know. I really don't know. At the moment, there's lots of potentials.
Really. Oh, well, we'll look forward to hearing what it's going to be in due course.
Yes, me too.
Well, it's been lovely to talk to you, Graham. Is there anything else you want to tell us about, or have we covered pretty much everything in your update?
I'm thoroughly enjoying it. As I say, I'm fully immersed in it at the moment, and so it's taking sort of leaps and bounds forward. There's the odd day when it goes back. So last week, what are we? We're Friday this week. So it was last Friday that I'd written what I thought was a really solid piece of work, which lasted for about 5 days, but about 2 days ago, I ditched it. And that's always a sadness especially when you've been working on it and then honing it a little bit much. Maybe I shouldn't have polished it too much before I was too sure, but yeah, that's gone. So, but basically, yeah, it goes up and down, but it's going in the right direction. So I'm confident.
Lovely. Oh, well, we look forward to talking to you again and hearing about how it's going, maybe in another 3 months' time or thereabouts.
Great.
Well, thanks very much, Graham. Goodbye. Look forward to talking to everybody again soon. Bye.
Thank you, Laura. Bye.